Support for WPR comes from Focus on Energy, committed to helping Wisconsinites focus on the planet by making smart energy choices. Energy resources for Earth Day and every day can be found at focusonenergy.com.
Support for WPR comes from Stone Harbor, a Door County resort and conference center overlooking the historic steel bridge in Sturgeon Bay. Details about hosting a wedding or conference are at stoneharbor-resort.com.
First, big corporations across the globe, such as Nike and Coca-Cola, all have philanthropic initiatives. In recent years, one of the most popular charitable campaigns from corporations has been to invest in women and girls in developing countries, the aim being to lift them out of poverty. Our next guest has been researching those programs and how well they work for her new book. She found that the goal of lifting girls and women out of poverty doesn't always work and doesn't always accomplish what the charity set out to do. Catherine Moeller is an assistant professor in the Department of Educational Policy Studies in the School of Education at UW-Madison. Her new book is The Gender Effect, Capitalism, Feminism, and the Corporate Politics of Development. Catherine, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, there's a lot of this kind of philanthropy going on, you write. A lot of companies have embraced this idea of the girl effect is one of the names for it. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so for more than a decade, companies like Nike, Goldman Sachs, and ExxonMobil have been investing their corporate philanthropic funds in programs for girls and women in Asia, Latin America, and Africa. And they've been doing so in order to generate what they call a ripple effect, from the scale of the girl or the woman, even to the scale of the nation. And the idea is that it reduces poverty, increases economic growth, decreases child and maternal mortality, limits population growth, conserves environmental resources. And as you said, the girl effect has really brought this idea into the popular imagination. And it's influenced programs for millions of girls from countries like Liberia, Bangladesh, and Brazil, where I did my research. And the Nike Foundation branded this concept in 2008. And so really what I look at in my research is how and why are these companies investing in girls and women, and what are the effects for both girls and women, as well as for many of these corporations who have been often involved in ongoing public relations problems for their business practices.
Right. And let's get into that before we get into the effect of these philanthropic efforts. You say companies like Nike have had concerns raised about labor in developing countries, third world countries, people sometimes call them, sometimes hurting, people say, the very girls and women that these charitable efforts are supposed to help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in the book, I talk about this as a phenomenon of companies attempting to deal with or mitigate their public relations problems. So companies often begin to invest in poor girls and women while they are recovering from these public relations problems. So we can think about Nike sweatshop woes, as you mentioned, legal claims against ExxonMobil for environmental and human rights abuses, or class action lawsuits against Walmart for gender discrimination. So all of these companies have these significant business practice problems frequently involving female workers. And so I think we need to ask ourselves, are these companies taking up the cosmetics of gender equality without its substance? So they're really looking to invest in girls and women as a way to mitigate these, but then also as a way to invest in kind of long-term development in frontiers, geographies where they may not already have business.
So the motives you wonder about, but also you question kind of the philosophy itself, the idea that if we help girls and women in developing countries, there's, with just a little nudge, there's kind of a bootstrap effect that's going to make everybody happier and more prosperous.
Yeah, so in the book, I really work to challenge these common sense assumptions about investing in girls and women as a silver bullet for everything from solving global poverty to fighting global climate change. And I try to show how this corporate approach actually shifts the burden of global change onto poor girls and women in the global South. It positions them as disproportionately responsible for problems they didn't create, without actually addressing the real causes of poverty and inequality. So while solving these problems is really important, this approach is actually ineffective, as well as, I would argue, morally wrong. You know, we already know that poor girls and women are disproportionately bearing the costs of poverty. So then why are we also making them responsible for ending it?
Right. You point toward maybe more structural problems of the international economy, or maybe in one country of ineffective or corrupt government. Maybe is, you know, no matter what you do for girls and women, these are bigger problems that they're going to overcome.
Right. And so part of what I argue in the book is that perhaps instead of creating these individual solutions to solving poverty, which is really a larger structural problem, what if companies sought instead to address these unfair global trade policies, the unequal distribution of resources, insufficient state investment in education, health, and infrastructure? These are the kind of structural conditions that cause poverty, and they have to be resolved in order for us to have a lasting change for girls and women and the poor around the world.
We're talking to Catherine Moeller, author of The Gender Effect. She's a professor at UW-Madison. Okay, so even if the motives aren't great and they're not tackling the whole problem, is there still a benefit if people are putting money and other resources into efforts to help girls and women living in poverty around the world?
Yeah, thanks so much. So, you know, through my fieldwork at two NGOs in Brazil that were funded by the Nike Foundation, I show that while there were benefits for the young women in this program, such as bringing them together and creating kind of a safe space as well as possible future opportunities, that this corporate approach really leads to narrow forms of education. So forms of education that the executives or philanthropists creating this program would never design for their own children. So on one hand, I show how there was this focus on pushing back the age of pregnancy and marriage. This is part of this equation that has been put forward, that you need to push pregnancy back in order to promote economic growth. And from a human rights perspective, we know that this is very problematic given the kind of long history of control over Black and brown girls and women's reproductive lives in the U.S. and globally. And then on the other hand, I show that these programs lead to a disproportionate emphasis on economic empowerment, so really trying to connect girls and women with economic assets. And what this translates into are really kind of narrow forms of education that focus on entrepreneurialism or training to be an administrative assistant or financial literacy, for example, rather than the kind of more holistic or transformative programs that the girls and women might have been desiring.
Yeah, talk about how, in practice, an educational program supported by corporate philanthropy actually educates.
Yeah, so the program I looked at had one kind of track was to become an administrative assistant, and the other track was to be an entrepreneur. And, you know, in one of my observations, we were in the classroom as the young women were just entering the program, and they went around the room and told us about what they wanted to be, and they wanted to be pharmacists, veterinarians, doctors. And then after this six-month kind of narrow program, they went around the same room and said what they wanted to be, and almost all of them said they wanted to be administrative assistants. And so we just think about what this form of kind of narrowing of education does, as opposed to opening up future possibilities and new trajectories for the young women. It really kind of closed down their imagination of what they thought they could be.
Suppose someone out there is involved in this corporate philanthropy and really is well-intentioned. What would be a better starting point for a program?
Yeah, so, you know, I think these corporations and the individuals that are working within them genuinely want to serve girls and women. But I think first they need to think about how do you clean up your business practices at home and abroad that are putting girls and women at risk. So this includes safe working conditions, equitable living wages, allowing workers to organize across your supply chains, providing health insurance, as well as paying fair taxes in order to fortify public systems. And then, you know, in this Me Too moment, eliminating gender discrimination and sexual violence in the workplace. These types of actions would be far more sustainable, kind of long-term solutions for creating lasting change, rather than these kind of short-term, quick-fix philanthropic programs.
I wanted to ask you about sustainability. When corporations set up these philanthropic arms, is there a sense that, okay, we're going in and we're trying to do something that's going to be here, you know, for decades? Or is it, okay, we've come in, we've done a good thing, hurrah?
Yeah, so in the case of the Nike Foundation, which was the kind of my primary case study, they invested in adolescent girls for 10 years total. But what I saw, particularly in Brazil, was that the investments in particular NGOs were only for 3 years, which is really kind of a short-term program. And, you know, oftentimes the NGOs and the foundation didn't have long-lasting relationships in these communities or to begin with, and then they would leave after three years. And so you see that there isn't really the long-term investment that's necessary to make transformative changes.
When I've talked to people on the show about international development or international health promotion, one case that I've heard made is it's great to have these great ideas from outside the culture you're working in, but can we do something more ground up? Go there and have people have a say in setting the agenda for what's going to help them the most. Is that out there? Is that happening?
Not in the programs that I was looking at. I think one of the main problems is that they were relying on individuals from the U.S. Who didn't have long-term relationships with these communities or even really the issue that they were addressing. And so I think what companies need to do if they want to be doing this work is to be working with women's rights and feminist organizations and other grassroots organizations that have been doing this work for decades and that have the solutions to the problems that are in their communities and in the broader global world.
And at the end of your book, it sounds like the opposite is happening. There's kind of a Silicon Valley model saying, let's keep doing this thing that you're raising concerns about, but bigger and faster.
Yeah, so I think there's really this attempt to scale up and to really attempt to reach more and more women as this kind of new global economic frontier. And so, you know, I ask questions about what does it mean to invest in poor girls and women in order to create a profit.
And do you see, as we start to wrap up, do you see bright spots, people who are kind of bucking this trend?
Yeah, so certainly within my research, there were, you know, feminists, educators, young women who were questioning what was going on, as well as philanthropists, powerful philanthropists in the community, as well as individuals working within these organizations and companies themselves.
We'll leave it there for now. Catherine, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Rob.
I've been talking to Catherine Moeller. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Educational Policy Studies in the School of Education at UW-Madison. We've been talking about her new book. It's called The Gender Effect: Capitalism, Feminism, and the Corporate Politics of Development.